Anybody in the business will tell you the downsides of making films in Alaska. But they keep coming, especially at festival time. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. The Anchorage International Film Festival is on, attracting more than 100 motion pictures, and some will tour in Alaska communities. Yours? Call us. Tell us. 1-800-478-TALK, 550-8422 if you're in Anchorage on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. There is still time to start the Business Administration and Management program at Alaska Pacific University. Module 2 courses start on Wednesday, October 21st. More at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Year 15 for the Anchorage International Film Festival, and it's become a cultural asset and grown every year. And I think this year there are more people who are accompanying their films than ever before. And so we've brought several people together to be panelists on this show. And first, I guess I'll introduce a director who came here from Zurich, Switzerland. How many years ago now, Nick?
You mean when I started making the film?
Yes.
The first time I was in Alaska was in March 2012. And I haven't been to Alaska before making this film.
And you just picked it and decided to come up here. So you've invested all these years in this film, Children of the Arctic, a feature-length film, which starts out with, basically, you just show up in Barrow and hope that the families will let you make a documentary about what life is like in Barrow.
Yes, that's basically it. Actually, I went there with my producer, and we didn't even know what the film would be about. We knew it was going to be about the community in Barrow, the northernmost town in the U.S., and we thought that's already interesting in and of itself, but we didn't know that we're going to focus on the young people. But we soon realized that would be an interesting angle to look into the future and not tell the story necessarily of the past, but to follow these young people as they grow up and go to school. And they're all, I should mention, they're Alaska natives. So they go whaling and live off the land, but still, you know, go to school and live in the modern American world. And so to us, this was just very, very interesting to get to know, to learn more about.
And so, Children of the Arctic showed to a packed house. A lot of people, you know, with family in Barrow, I think, in fairness, showed up and helped to pack the house. But you had the cast of the movie.
Yes.
These are people the documentary was about. They were there. The new baby was there.
The walking around on stage.
Yes.
That was fun.
and everybody seemed to have a good time.
Oh, yeah.
At the screening. You probably really enjoyed yourself.
Oh, absolutely. I really did.
Well, thank you for coming in.
Of course, thank you.
And there's another opportunity for it to be seen, I think, tomorrow at the Anchorage Museum. And the person to tell us about that would be probably Rebecca Potterbaum, who is the festival director, right?
I am. You're exactly right.
Yeah. Well, so when does Children of the Arctic run again? Do you have a schedule?
It's Wednesday.
Oh, okay. Laura Moscatello, program director.
It's tomorrow at the museum at 5:30. And there will be a performance as well.
Really?
At the museum.
Oh,
a
yeah.
Dance performance.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's looking forward to that. It's going to be 20 people performing on stage and doing Eskimo dancing and drumming. And two of them are actually in the film.
Wow.
So that's going to be fun.
Yeah. So you'll probably fill up the museum.
I hope so, yes.
And that's a free, isn't that a freebie?
No, it's not. It's if you have all films pass, you know, of course, you can get it. But it's $8 for a ticket.
Are right, though, that we did have some free films at the museum this last weekend.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Our family film program. And even in a partnership with the Alaska Public Media, we had a documentary that was for free. But, yeah.
So I want to go back to you, Rebecca Potterbaum. This is your first year as director, right?
This is. Last year I assisted Laura in the director role. I was a volunteer coordinator, but this year she has filled the program director role, and I'm the behind the scenes coordinator.
One of your expansion ideas or development ideas, I guess is be the proper language to phrase it, is to tour the best of the fest. And that's one of the reasons that I was excited to have you on again, is to see if there are people out there in some communities who might want to get the best of the fest to their communities. What would it take? Well, you'd need a place to show it. You need probably some organization. And you need, I don't know, I guess a little cash or something.
Well, Steve, that's exactly right. The Anchorage International Film Festival has Anchorage in the name, but I don't think that it should, you know, just be contained by Anchorage exactly. And part of our mission with the Anchorage International Film Festival is to promote the cultural and entertainment opportunities for all Alaskans. My hope is that I'm campaigning a little Best of Fest tour to take place in February and March of some of our award winners, either juried winners or audience choice awards, which will be announced on Sunday at our award ceremony. But to tour them in like 1 or 2 day little segments all into communities around Alaska. And a number of communities are already on board, like Homer and Skagway and Fairbanks. Sitka and Juneau are we're in talks. But I would really, really love to be able to take this just as kind of a little ripple around Alaska, because we feel like just because you're not in Anchorage physically does not mean that you shouldn't be, you don't deserve to be exposed to the independent films and the amazing storytelling that we share here in Anchorage.
So this could be really any community in Alaska. And how would it really work? It's not like you have to send film cans. I worked for a film distributor one time, and I used to have to go to the bus terminal carrying these cans at 35, 16 millimeter usually, but sometimes 35.
That's quite a visual.
It was. Yeah. and get those film cans off to these theaters where they would run, and then I'd have to go back and pick them up at the bus terminal.
Oh, man. That's luckily, you know, with the progression of technology, we've come a long way since that. But, you know, I'm sure that there are still people who still do that. But ours, you know, they fit on a hard drive or, you know, on discs. And so that's a much easier to send.
So would a staffer have to go?
Right. So in a couple communities, I already know, because I lived in Homer for a while and still have ties there, that, you know, I'll physically go down and represent the festival in their little Best of Fest and bring the media there. But in other communities, it can just be kind of remotely, or just, you know, sending media there. But it's kind of working in a number of ways. I see a lot of variety happening already, that a lot of times we have a host venue that has just offered the space and volunteering the time, and maybe they might charge a little admission fee to, you know, cover their overhead, but they really want to, you know, just offer this to the community as a part of kind of a sponsorship or a benefit to the community. And I have a number of them that are, you know, normal theaters that are going to charge, you know, a regular mission just like any other film. And then since we are not at this point charging anything for screening fees, we're doing kind of a reciprocal, like they'll donate a little bit back to the festival so that we can support the further Best of Fest, you know, and that kind of thing. So a lot of different ways, but we're really looking for community engagement in that way. And so if there's other people out there in those communities that have a venue or have the interest in bringing it there, then that's really what we're looking for.
Well, the 800 number is 478-TALK. And just tell, I think Monica is doing a phone screening, say, I'm interested. And we'll take your number and everything, and pass all that information on. Well, generally speaking, when we screen the calls, that information is confidential. But if we release it, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's great. And it could be that there'd be other, I mean, I would think the equipment is pretty much either carried on an airplane or you've got it at the library or the school or someplace in your community.
Even as Nick told me before, that the even in the northernmost town in all of the U.S. even has a high like a high-tech projection in their theaters and things like that. So
also, if you were involved or you kind of wondered who that guy was up in Barrow and would like to call and do a shout-out to Nick, feel free. The telephone number is 1-800-478-TALKS. If you're in Anchorage, it's 550-8422, just a local call. And Laura Muscatello, what kind of things are likely to show up in Best of the Fest? For people that have absolutely no idea, I mean, for instance, Nick's production, could that be in there?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. His film was not only in competition, but because of the fact that it screened at the Beartooth and it was eligible for the Audience of Choice Award, both of those things make it highly eligible for being in Best of the Fest, besides the fact that it just makes sense to travel around Alaska for that purpose.
And the, but there would also be like some features, some shorts and so forth.
A little bit of everything. Yeah, we'll have some short docs probably, as well as some feature length documentaries, as well as shorts, super shorts. I don't know if we're going to do animation or not. I don't know. We haven't actually discussed that aspect, but animation is up for juried competition as well. So
how do you feel it's been going, Rebecca?
You know what? We've been seeing a large turnout. And I think also, too, spurred by a lot of the social media feedback we've been seeing, you know, I think that people are engaged in a little different ways than in different years. It's always evolving. You know, these film festivals are always evolving, and even the outreach for film festivals is evolving. So personally, I don't know how it compares necessarily at this point to other years, but personally, I think that we've been seeing really, really great turnout.
Well, you know, I try and go every year. And it's really nice because I'm not doing the morning news anymore and I don't have to get up at 3 a.m. I can I'm getting to see more. And I don't know if it's that or something else, but my impression is that there are more filmmakers here than any prior year.
You know, that's hard to say. I think we had a lot of visiting filmmakers last year as well. I can only speak for a few years, but we had quite a few last year as well. I think it's actually comparable in some ways.
Uh-huh.
But also with Nick bringing up the cast from Barrow, I mean, or Down, I should say, you know, then that brings a whole different contingent. I guess with that would be quite a few more people.
Nick Brandestini, the director of Children of the Arctic, I want to explore this a little bit more on your project. It was astounding. It certainly didn't look like journalism to me. It, you know, looked like an amazingly, the word I would use would be flat. It was no judgment whatsoever. I'm taking my camera there, and I'm going to take pictures of what they let me take pictures of. And you're going to get to know this place and these people, period.
Yeah, I think that was absolutely my intention. This is not a political film or about certain issues. It's about the people who live there. And I'm just personally I like to meet people that have a completely different background or way of life. So this was just, for me, interesting to get to know that. And I was assuming that other people would be interested in learning more about that, too. So it does touch on some of the issues. A lot of people, when they think of Alaska or northern Alaska, think about the oil and climate change and these things. So this is in the film a little bit, but the film is not about that at all. It just comes up naturally throughout the story of the film.
The Inupiat are very adaptable, very tough people. And they take a lot in stride, and I think we see that. But didn't you get the sense that everybody's a little on edge because of the changing climate, because the ice has become so different now?
I mean, one thing I noticed was, of course, that in the year that I was filming their spring whale hunt, which was around, was in May that time, 2013, the ice conditions weren't such that they could do the whaling in the traditional way with a skin boat. It has, the ice has to break off a certain way so they can go onto the water and then from there hunt the whales. So that year it was actually called off. And this is all part of the film. And I was there with one of the whaling crews. I was very fortunate to be able to follow them. And so that was a sad thing for everybody involved. I think it has... then they went with a motorboat out and they could still do the whaling, but it was a little bit different that year. And I think it's been a bit better the year after. And then this year, it's changing. It's not like it's going down, down, down. It's going... It's just uncertain. That's what I would call it.
Yeah. But would it be your sense that it is unsettling to people?
I would think so, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And then you're watching also a very small sample, very few people who are going to let you film them and follow their lives. And they're progressing through their lives now. It must be kind of interesting to you to watch how their lives are evolving.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you have one couple in particular who were going to go off to college in the beginning of the film and didn't. They decided the grandparents are more important.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Parents probably didn't like that all that much.
Well, I'm not going to make a comment about that, but it's up to them. But actually, they weren't even married, the couple you're referring to, Josiah and Flora. They were getting married like 2 months after I met them. So, it was very interesting to follow that, their lives throughout these years.
But it was they seemed so sure. We want to be with our grandparents.
Yes. I think that's really what they want to do. And I understand that. And I think people watching the film, they get, and people out in Europe or people who have like a different background, they really admire the sense of community and family that you see in Barrow and that you also see in the film. And they really... it opens their eyes in a way.
Yeah. We're talking about the Anchorage International Film Festival, and Nick Brandestini is the director of Children of the Arctic, which shows one more time at the festival and could make it to Best in the Fest, depending on how the voting and the judging and so forth takes place. And we also have program director Laura Moscatello. How many years has it been for you now?
This is my first year as program director. I was festival director last year, and prior to that, volunteer coordinator and volunteer. Started out as a volunteer in 2007.
And it would appear that you're kind of hooked.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. This actually provided me with more of the creative aspect of the film festival, which I really enjoyed. Just reaching out to filmmakers and actually curating several of the films in the festival. As a matter of fact, one film that's showing tonight, Vanishing Sail, is a filmmaker that I actually reached out to. And so I'm excited to see some of these films. Love Between the Covers was another one in the festival now, because I just reached out and said, hey, would you be interested in submitting to the festival. Another one tonight actually is From This Day Forward that I reached out to. So that's been a fun creative aspect to doing this position.
So tell me about the From This Day Forward.
From This Day Forward is going to be screening at the Beartooth at 5:30, and it's a story about the documentary filmmaker's family, specifically her father, who, when she was in middle school, started to become a woman, and what happened with their relationship as a family and the marriage. And the story takes place during a time when the filmmaker is getting ready to get married. And so you wonder towards the end of the film if her father's going to wear a dress or not.
An excellent story.
Well, that's
it's a fascinating
about love
story.
And family.
It's really about love and commitment and relationship, and
it's beautiful.
And the filmmaker's here too. So very excited about that.
That is not just any movie.
No, it is not.
and that's what characterizes the film festival, I would say, is things that you're going to have to go out of your way to see otherwise. And that's, to me, that's the most enjoyable thing, to see a Hong Kong you know, science fiction, mystery, vampire thriller.
Well, actually, another one that I reached out to is called A Courtship. And that film is about Christian courtship and arranged marriage. And this young girl goes to live with a family, and the father, father basically starts interviewing people for her to marry. It's called A Courtship, and it's fascinating. And you talk about that non-judgment, like the way that Nick did his film. Basically, this filmmaker did it from that perspective. She's not placing any judgment on this. It's just, this is what's going on. And she just portrays that quite simply.
You know, we've learned that the city of Anchorage is one of the most multicultural in the nation. Has some of the most multicultural, has the most multicultural neighborhood, two, the top two multicultural neighborhoods in the country. And it seems only appropriate that a place like Anchorage would host this type of diversity.
Definitely. I think it's important for us to see what's going on in the rest of the world.
Yeah, well, it must be important to you because you've been doing this reaching out. How do you find out about these things? Are there trade journals or what?
Well, I don't actually go through the trade journals. Often I'm looking at the other film festivals and who's won Audience Choice Awards, who's won some of the awards in the festivals, and that's how I've been reaching out. Sometimes I'll see a film kind of come up in another way, too, sometimes on Facebook, sometimes through like a back door. But generally speaking, it's been through some of the Audience Choice Awards or awards that they've received in other festivals.
So if I was really interested in one of these, like, for instance, this is a bad choice, but Wrecking Crew, I think finally got available. That was festival, 4 or 5 years ago. But if you love music, you need to see this. But it was unavailable because of licensing difficulties. A lot of these, are there ways to get them? Do they get put on CDs where somebody can go into Netflix or somewhere and find them? I mean, all this stuff has gotten electronic now.
I mean, I think if you were to reach out to the filmmaker, filmmakers are generally speaking pretty kind, generous people, in my experience. And so I feel like if you reached out to the filmmaker, you may get a positive response and a way to be able to watch the film. They'll give you avenues, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah,
but
Rebecca.
Also, film festivals in general, whether or not it's understood or not, is not only for audiences in all corners of the globe to be able to see a diverse array of stories, but also that these filmmakers, that's a lot of times their avenue to show their story or to interact with people, and then it gets seen, and sometimes that is what leads to distribution or, you know, a company that can produce the film and distribute it worldwide, you know, would see it at a film festival. And so sometimes these film festivals are not just for entertainment of audiences. Sometimes it actually is a platform for sharing it with the bigger community of the world. Yeah.
So, for instance, mm-hmm. the Friday night show Edward, the makers of that were basically in the play about this Edward Muybridge, or early in, you know, a photographer, the late 19th century, who kind of wanted to get sequential images of things that moved, mm-hmm. horses, people, and so forth. And they fell in love with this historical story and the phenomenon of this person that they had to make a movie, a kind of a low-budget movie, that is distributed all over the world except the United States. So they're probably a good example of one.
Definitely. Well, and maybe that might change, too. Mm-hmm. You never know. I mean, someone may actually choose to distribute it in some way. I mean, he did say at opening night that there are a couple of other people that are interested in making that same film. You know, Andy Serkis is one of them. So it's interesting to know whether or not that, you know, we'll take it in another direction too. So you mm-hmm. never know.
Right. Yeah.
But you're exactly right with your, the technology of, you know, of being able, making films more available. I mean, a lot of our films, even just recent previous years, like I Believe in Unicorns from last year, is now on Netflix, and some other films are really readily available, and I've seen them in libraries. So
yeah,
it's, you know, there's just one step away from potentially, you know, see you viewing it in your home.
Yeah. Well, the business has gotten so weird and continues to get weird. I mean, publishing got weirder.
Do you wish everybody was still toting around 35-pound cans of
No,
film?
I do not. I don't miss that. The cumbersome part of the industry is I really am so glad that we've got past the lighting requirements. Used to be absolutely unbelievable just because of the film stock and what it was capable of registering. And then there was all the messing around with your focus and lenses, and the good equipment was so expensive. And I mean, there's really good lenses sometimes in telephones nowadays.
Actually, well, Rebecca and I just saw one recently at the Beartooth that was just filmed on an iPhone. So definitely.
was that JoJo?
No, it was not in the film festival. It's called Tangerine.
It's funny. I was actually just at a classroom visit this morning. We're doing some outreach with some of the local schools and film classes. And there's a young local filmmaker who did the 3,022 feet, that documentary about the Mount Marathon race. And it was so funny because his 22-year-old college perspective, he was talking about, you know, it was inspiring the film class on, you know, on what sometimes it takes to make a film, and sometimes, you know, the lens, he goes, you know, sometimes you can't afford it. And he goes, you know, sometimes you debate about selling a kidney, you know, a lens can cost half a kidney. And I was like, I thought, wow, isn't that incredible that you've thought about how much of a kidney it would cost? But at the same time, you know, it is true. There's high tech, there's low tech, but that doesn't mean that there aren't, you know, avenues in between and that it is a good fit for everybody. Like, you know.
I think in the end, though, it's all about the story.
It really is.
You know, you can have the best equipment in the world, but if you don't have a solid story and you don't have something that's going to carry people through and, you know, gain some momentum, you don't have a great film.
We are talking about the Anchorage International Film Festival. We've got the director of one of the motion pictures and two of the people involved with the organization. It's in its 15th year, and it's happening in Anchorage. But they also are touring it. In other words, the best of the fest, those that come out on top, are being put together into a program that can travel and go to other communities. And possibly your community is interested in hosting that, and you can get in touch with us. Our telephone number is 800-478-TALK. I got so many numbers here. I almost started giving out your number, which probably wouldn't be a bad idea. 1-800-478-TALK. It's a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Nick Brandestini is director of Children of the Arctic, and maybe you were involved with that production, or maybe you'd like to say hi to Nick from Barrow. Feel free. The lines are open right now on Talk of Alaska. So before we take a break, I think I'd like to talk a little bit about Love Between the Covers. The maker of that documentary came and, you know, accompanied it. And I think does it get shown again?
It does. I honestly can't remember what day, but you can find our schedule online at anchoragefilmfestival.org. So she won't be here for the second screening. She just left yesterday, but she really enjoyed the screening prior. So,
yeah, and this was a very impressive piece because it's my hat's off on this one. Because it's not just a documentary, you know, where the filmmaker goes to some convention with a bunch of unusual characters and strings it together into a film. This was a really exhaustive analysis of something that probably saved the publishing industry.
Definitely.
And that is romance novels.
Yep.
And who writes them? Particularly the women who write them, and all the variety of themes and the nature of the following, what it is as a business, you know, what it means to people. Mm-hmm. And she put a lot of thought into all this. This is like, I think, wasn't it a 7-year project?
Yeah, it's very, and she traveled across the whole country to do it as well. So it was quite exhaustive in terms of the amount of breadth that she covered in that film. Yeah, exactly as you say. Publishing women's stories and the fact that those romance novels speak to different women in different ways. I mean, who knew that there was a subsection of romance novels for Amish romances or for lesbian romance or for, you know, just vampire romance.
Yeah, if you're a lesbian, you know where that category.
Yes.
And there's certain little signals that you can see even in the cover design. And they go into all that. It's great.
It is great.
Including talking to scholars who have studied this element of the popular culture, because it really does say something about the culture as it is. Well, I see that Alexis has connected with us. I think we'll take a break and one of the filmmakers, the director of Vanishing Sail, we'll have him on as Talk of Alaska continues. Well, that was really refreshing. There were no underwriting credits. Wasn't that nice? You know, it was brought to us by us. Well, a generous donation by us. The telephone number 1-800-478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. It's Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about the Anchorage International Film Festival, and we've got a filmmaker here. We've got the organizers here, and we have got a filmmaker on the line from the West Indies. Alexis, welcome to Talk of Alaska. You're the director of Vanishing Sail.
That's correct. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Yes. Well, Vanishing Sail, I have a feeling it's about boats.
That's very good. Yes, it is. It's about the traditional sailboats of the West Indies.
And what kind of a boat would this be if I were to look at it? Would I know? Would it have a particular look to it?
Okay, so yes, indeed. Now, the majority of the film takes place on the island of Carriacou, which is in the Grenadines. And this is where, for hundreds of years, they built many, many trading sloops and schooners to supply the West Indies with everything that was needed. And due to the encroaching state of progress in our islands, as the rest of the world, this particular very beautiful traditional craft is dying out. And so the film takes place there, and it's about a man who's getting on in years, and he decides to build one last sailing vessel for his sons to kind of get encouraged to continue the trade. And he's going to build a sloop, which is a one-masted sailboat, and it's about 42 feet. And basically, we follow him for 3 years during his build, with all his trials and tribulations, and we learn about the family. And during that time, we learn about the history of the islands. And it is a documentary, but it's quite unusual in that it does not really follow the traditional form of documentary. It's got a few different surprises in it. So I really hope a lot of you will come out tonight to see it.
Alexis, thank you so much for calling in. And I'm so sorry that you won't be able to accompany your documentary. Why did you get interested in this? This just seems like a kind of off-center subject.
Totally, totally off center. I came out here 30 years ago from England as a photographer, and I basically began specializing in marine photography because I love sailing and being on the water. And I built a career around the yachting industry, and I became quite successful with basically shooting advertising commercial work for the large charter yacht industry. And I came to a point where this was all marvelous, and the money was good, and the lifestyle was beautiful, but something was missing. And that's when I saw the most simple, beautiful wooden sailboat sail by. And I kind of turned my head and turned direction for a few years and began to follow these boats to learn more about where they came from. So that was my entry into the this wonderful world that's sort of coexisting on a knife edge down there of, you know, potential losing skills and going to hotels and progress, or trying to hang on to them a little longer. So that's how I got into it.
Yes, Alexis, as you know, coastal development and the super rich and their super huge boats and all that sort of thing is really wiping out so much traditional activities along the coasts, particularly in the Mediterranean, and I'm sorry to hear in the West Indies as well. Do you think there's any hope at all to keep this tradition going? I mean, this is the last guy in his last boat, and what, do you say he's up in his 90s?
He's not that old. He's in his 70s.
Wow, that's not old at all.
Spring chicken.
No, it's there is hope, and the film is a hopeful film, and there is a few twists in it that will be quite entertaining. There is quite a bit of humor, because I have to tell you that the West Indies is a very humorous place. Tradition is one thing, but we live in a good world where, you know, you have to laugh every now and again about the situation, and the people down in Karaikul were very welcoming to me. And I've been in and out of that island now for the last 15 or 18 years, spending time with them and documenting this process and actually helping them building boats and also finding new markets. Now, there is a possibility for the skills to continue. And when you see how beautiful these boats are, maybe you'll come down yourself and decide to build one.
That's exactly what I wanted to do, was go down there and visit.
Wow. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Alexis, thank you. Thank you for your effort and for calling and telling us about it and for sharing this wonderful story.
Well, you're very welcome. I really hope you guys enjoyed out there. And I definitely think it's one of your films worth freezing for.
All right, great.
I love that line.
Yes, indeed. Well, all right. Yeah, kind of a labor of love. Alexis, thanks so much for your call. Our phone number is 1-800-478-8255. What? Yeah, 478-TALK. And a local call on Anchorage at 550-8422. And we're open for business. We're ready for your calls to talk about the movie business, maybe. I'm a little baffled because we had this state subsidy for motion pictures, and it kind of ended up, we got a couple of features out of it, maybe three, and we got a lot of reality TV out of it, and you know, now the state's kind of hurting for money, and I'm just thinking that this is not the most robust program, let me put it that way. And yet, there's such interest. I mean, Nick, maybe you could tell me, why Alaska? I know why I'm interested in Barrow, but I'm not quite sure why some guy from Zurich is interested in Barrow.
I get this question a lot, of course, and I'm always a bit, not irritated, but surprised why people ask that, because why wouldn't you be interested? Just by the fact that it's the northernmost place in and of itself is just interesting. And then the landscape that's completely flat, there's no mountains. There's very little vegetation, and there's, of course, very cold, and it's 24-hour darkness in the winter and 24-hour sunshine in the summer. And then the interesting culture you have up there, everything is just, I don't know, I just find it interesting. I can't explain this. Really.
And you like this?
Yeah, of course. I do.
So you respond, in other words, aesthetically to this very, very different environment.
Yes. I mean, the landscape also plays a big role in the film. I mean, it's the vastness of the landscape comes across right at the beginning. It actually opens with a shot of the tundra in the summer, and our main character, Samuel, is hunting caribou. And to me, the look of the landscape where there's not much there, the simplicity of it, I just like very much.
Hmm. Yeah, simplicity. That's a good word. And somehow, you know, it's feature length, about 90 minutes, maybe even a little bit more, and it leaves you wanting more.
That's very nice to hear. Thank you so much.
Well, no, I'm perplexed as to why, because the whole film is really quite simple. People are kind of interesting and engaging and like that, but there's something about the way that you have portrayed that landscape that makes you want more. It makes me as a viewer want more.
That's always what the filmmaker wishes for. Of course, it's it's horrible if people think, oh my God, it's already 90 minutes and I have to sit 10 minutes more in the theater. I can't stand it. That's, of course, what you don't want. But that's nice to hear. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting that, you know, Nick said he was so intrigued by this place. And then now you're intrigued more, you know, as an Alaskan and more by this place that, you know, through seeing his film. And then Laura was even intrigued to build a traditional boat because of seeing this film. And I think that's one of the most, one of the actual palpable, real examples of why film festivals are important, because they share and bring to your own space, your town, these stories and these viewpoints that you may never have encountered before. And one of the things that I think is so excellent, having so much participation from filmmakers visiting or even calling into this radio show or things like that, is that they are storytellers and they've shared their stories. But when they visit through a film festival, it's not just you're watching a movie on a screen like you might see, you know, James Bond or whatever. You actually get to have this interaction with them about their story that they created. And one of the I think that's one of the most special parts of a film festival is that there's that interaction. And then it often will create this opportunity to talk more about these stories with the people that you're standing in line with. Oh, what have you seen? What have you seen? Oh, didn't you think that, and it starts these conversations with people you may never have ever talked to about anything. And it's one of the really great parts about a film festival. It's just opening up your eyes.
What I've heard is that as festivals go, this one has a really, really good hanging out factor.
we like it. So.
It's competitive. This one's competitive too, but it's generally a competitive business. As we've heard, the business is such that the studios are, very risk averse, or you're very careful how they go out on a limb, and they only repeating patterns of what they already know will succeed, and then that leaves all this room open for independence. But all they really can do is go out on the festival circuit and hope that their picture does well, and then they, of course, want to try and promote and do that so they can work the next project, and so they want to go and they want to schmooze and they want to they're busy, they're working when they come to these festivals, and I've heard over and over again that this one is not like that. That everybody just gets to hang out.
Well, a lot of the filmmakers actually submit to our festival because they want to come to Alaska. That is really probably the number one reason why filmmakers submit to the Anchorage International Film Festival. And not because I do ask them, why did you submit to this festival? Sometimes it's the time of year. Sometimes it's other aspects. But it really is because they want to come to Alaska.
Well, I think Barack Obama, he was kind of a tourist when he came here, too.
He submitted a film, too. who
wouldn't want to come here, right?
Well, let's go to Roger, joins the program from White Mountain. Roger, good to hear from you on Talk of Alaska.
Yeah, good morning. A couple questions. Where did the name Barrow come from, and what was its Inupiaq name before that? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Happy holidays.
Well, I think Nick actually knows.
Yes, hi, Robert. it was called Ukpiagvik. Yes, Ukpiagvik, before it was called Barrow. And I believe Barrow was the name of one of the whalers that came over from Europe. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty much. So the name changed, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And this part is actually, it's the history of the place is a little bit explored in the film right at the beginning with a few text cards. The film is located, you know, we see where we're at. And then that's basically all of the history that is in the film. But yeah, it was one of the whalers that came up.
Yeah, thanks for that call there from White Mountain out there by Nome. Nome would be a really good place to tour it, too.
I'd love to take it there.
I know we've sent films in the past to Nome because they have a little film festival there.
Yeah. Telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK. It's a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. You want to talk to people involved with the Anchorage International Film Festival. I'm Steve Heimel as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Alaska Pacific University delivers an affordable education and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. Graduate with work-ready experience in the career field of your choice. Apply now for fall 2016 and find out more about APU's Promise Tuition Grant and other scholarships at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
All right, I got a question for Laura probably knows. Laura Moscatello is Program Director of the Anchorage International Film Festival. And in putting together the program, how many people are involved in screening these things and deciding, reviewing
quite a few
the entries?
Yeah, we have probably 5 features programmers. We have 2 shorts programmers. We have 3 docs programmers, including myself. And Rebecca and I ended up doing the animation program this year. So there were less submissions for that category.
I mean, somebody has to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And features and feature-length docs take up the most amount of time, of course. Yeah.
You bet.
And we had 40% more submissions this year. So, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So what's the ratio? What's a person's shot? 1 out of 3? 1 out of 2?
We had over 350 submissions, and we chose a little over 100 films. So
that's 1 out of 3.
Yeah.
Not quite even.
Yeah.
That.
So there's quite a few choices to be made.
Yeah. So there's
some
a lot
obvious
of
ones, you know, and then there are some ones that end up right on the fence for some people sometimes. Yeah.
There may be somebody, you know, listening now that might be an ideal, you know, Anchorage person that would want to do that. Do they do this at home, or do they get together as a group, or how does it go?
You know, most times we do have the programmers watch at home, but a few of us have gotten together as a group, especially the docs programmers. So that was a really great way to just get together and watch a few films and then discuss them on the spot. So
And then the process is that they talk it over, or how does it, is there a vote, or?
Yeah, basically, towards the end of when we screen everything, we started making our list of our top, say, 20. And then we started whittling down, okay, so what's actually going to be chosen? And in terms of most of the films this year, it didn't seem like there was a lot of argument about one film over another. It was an obvious choice for a lot of people.
Really?
And I think in years past, that hasn't always been the case.
Do you get winners from other festivals?
Winners,
like, you know, Nick, have you gotten any awards for this thing yet?
Yes. Actually, we were very lucky to get an award at the world premiere at the Zurich Film Festival, where the cast, or the stars, or whatever you want to call it, call them, were there. And yeah, we've got an award for that. And we have won some other awards since, yeah.
And then, so there's an example, Children of the Arctic.
Oh, yeah, we have definitely quite a few award winners in the festival.
So they come in there carrying palms already.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Now,
definitely.
Do you get a palm if you win this, or do you, I mean, oh, there is that Usyk.
Yes, yeah, you get an Usyk if you win.
But, I mean, do they get to put a palm on their promotional material?
Well, our laurels are actually moose antlers. Yep. They're great.
Yeah, they're the coolest.
You're killing me here.
We have fun.
They're
with
definitely
it.
Recognizable.
We're a quirky little film festival in the north. You got it.
You're killing me. Well, okay, we had a few minutes left. It's 1-800-478-8255. A local call in Anchorage of 550-8422. Filmmakers still coming. I was amazed we got a Nutak documentary along with a Barrow documentary. But these are people that came in to make these documents.
Mm-hmm. They're important stories to tell.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess they are. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not everyone's going to know about Barrow. And so by, you know, watching Nick's film, they're going to get a sense of what it's like to be there.
Oh, very much so. And I was wondering about that because it's really, you know, I grew up in the country, you know, every boy in my region would go out hunting deer. And I don't think 4 minutes have gone by in your movie before he's pulling the guts out of a caribou. Do you get any feedback from people saying, ew?
Yes, I do, actually.
Of course. I mean, that's a visceral reaction,
yes,
right?
Yes, I was actually surprised how it's a small percentage, but some people are shocked by this. And I was actually, I did not expect this, and I did not mean to, you know, for this to be shocking at all, because I was just following, you know, Samuel, who is like really a hunter, and that's what he does, and that's how it goes. And it's nothing, I didn't even, when I did this, it was just for me, because I've been there by that time, I was accustomed to the way of life, so I wasn't shocking at all. But some people just can't deal with this. But it's only at the beginning, and then, yeah. You get
over
it.
I mean, there's other stuff gets cut up.
But you know, that brings up
subsistence.
But that's just how it is.
But I will say this. You got the microphone really close to that first shot.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah.
That brings up an interesting point, though. Even as a programmer, when we're watching films, we have all of those filters built up in our minds as to what we think is appropriate or not appropriate. And some programmers might think that that scene was too much to include the film, you know, in the festival. And you know, it's interesting when you watch different things that are subject matter that you might not agree with. You know, it's interesting to be able to make those choices based on our own influence and our own perspective of life.
Well, I mean, it is so multicultural. I cannot imagine any person who wasn't made queasy about something in that festival.
But, you know, like the film about Christian courtship, that kind of makes me a little queasy, you know? And so there are some of those films that are just, you know, might make you uncomfortable for whatever reason, but I think it's, you know, it's another great form of storytelling, and it kind of challenges you to, you know, think about your belief system and think about your perspective.
Well, I think art also... artists usually want their art to be a bit disturbing. We prefer disturbing, say, to comforting, for instance.
Mm-hmm. And not all films, you know, elicit, you know, such a visceral reaction, but some of them play on other kind of reactions. Like there's a film airing tomorrow night called Lost and Found, and it's a cross-cultural connection story about people in the Pacific Northwest of Alaska, BC, and Washington specifically, collecting debris that has washed ashore from the tsunami in Japan, and some of them deciding to build memorials with it, some of them deciding to actually seek out the owners, the original owners in Japan of these items, and return those items to Japan. And it is one of the most just beautiful, just, I mean, really, really encouraging stories of cross-cultural connection. And there's a few Alaskan families represented in the film. The Japanese consulate is actually going to be represented tomorrow night at the Beartooth, and one of the Anchorage families that's in the film. And so it's just this really beautiful connection of people that you never would have ever maybe been a part of their lives. Maybe much like Nick in Barrow, he might never have thought 5 years ago that he would, or 10 years ago, that he would have been invested in these people's lives. Well, you know, there's a lot of things that just happen, and that, you know, taking those chances to make the connections, and then we get to be connected as well via the audience and being part of this story and sharing in that.
Well, Lost and Found, is that the name of it?
Lost, mm-hmm, and Found? Lost and Found.
It's a great film.
It's an amazing film.
I've seen the trailer, and of course we followed the subject on this radio show, mm-hmm, you know, because it's, you know, it's a very Alaskan issue and is still around. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there'll be a dry eye in the place.
I was going to say, I was going to recommend bring your tissues.
Exactly.
I'm bringing my waterproof mascara.
Yeah.
I just said bring wear long sleeves. It's Alaskan style. Anyway.
Too much fun. You're killing me here. Well, some other favorites.
One film that I haven't mentioned, which is actually going to only screen once, is called Very Semi-Serious, and that's about the New Yorker cartoonist and the whole process that the New Yorker goes through in choosing cartoons and some of the people, the cartoonists. Another one that I also reached out to, which is a work in progress, it's called The Brainwashing of My Dad, and that's going to be Friday night at 7 at the Alaska Experience Theater, and it is...
Not to be missed.
Not to be missed. The documentary programmer's father, basically what happened to him by listening to Rush Limbaugh and watching Fox News.
Became a Ditto head.
Exactly.
Was it a good upstanding liberal?
Yeah,
became
and you
a
learn
ditto
about
head.
Ditto heads, which I didn't know anything about. You learn about how media has changed over the years. You learn about... quite a few things. It's a great film, and it's still a work in progress. And I'm trying to think of Edward Plays Again tomorrow night at the museum, and that's worth seeing if you didn't see it before.
Yeah, especially, you know, of course, I went to art school, so, you know, I was very acquainted with his work, as almost any art student is, but many people are not. This is just absolutely insanely remarkable, weird story.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of weird stories, you should definitely come to the Beartooth for Martini Matinee at 2:30
well,
on Friday.
Yippee, I'm going to end the show right now.
Yeah,
by golly.
Yeah, that will be a fun event.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Yeah,
this is great. We've been talking to Nick Brandestini, Laura Moscatello, and Rebecca Potterbaum of the Anchorage International Film Festival. Thanks so much to Dave Waldron for being on the controls, Josh Edge, Monica Goki on the phones, and thank you for listening. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. And by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com.
UAS School of Management offers Bachelor of Business Administration degree programs online where learning critical information, new technologies, and tools are part of the course. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.